You're listening to Cards to the Moon, a podcast about trading cards from both a collector and investor perspective. We hope you'll stick around for the ride as we take a deep dive into the state of the hobby, share some hot takes, hopefully some useful advice and fun stories along the way. Hey guys, welcome back to Cards to the Moon. This is episode 196. My name is Clark from Five Card Guys on Instagram and fivecardguys.com. With me co-hosting, as usual, is Hyung of Integrity Sports Cards. But John, who is Trade You at Recess and our third co-host, he couldn't make it today, but he should be back for our next episode. That's okay, though, because there's a couple big things that happened this week that the two of us, you and I, Hyung, can discuss on the show. And first, off the top, I want to talk about the Topps first card fiasco, right? If you don't know what we're talking about, as part of the 2024 Topps Series 1 set, it was announced that Topps would insert the very first card that's produced off the printer of each base card in the set and stamp it first card on the front. So it would be a one-of-one card. The problem was that there were these seemingly random one-of-one base cards that started to appear in packs and being listed on eBay, but no one knew what it was exactly, right? We didn't think it was the first card that was announced because it didn't have the aforementioned stamp. But then collectors, and even within our own sports card chat group, we start to realize that none of the first card one-of-ones were showing up. So after our discussion on the weekend, I DM'd Topps on Instagram through Five Card Guys, hoping to get some clarification, you know, whether these base one-of-ones were actually the first card one-of-ones, but without the stamp, you know, if they made a mistake. Right. I didn't hear back from them for a couple of days. And then 3 days later, we see Topps issued a statement on Twitter or X that was exactly the case we suspected, right? So long story longer, they said if you had one of these base one of ones, you could send it back to them. They'll stamp it first card for you, and I guess send it back. And they'll also issue a Topps credit, which I don't believe was disclosed yet just how much. But anyway, what was your first thought after hearing most recent blunder? Yeah.
Just for clarification, how many of these first cards were supposed to be printed off that? Is it just one and that's why it was stamped one of one? Or is it a set of like, okay, these are the first print runs, there's 1,000 of these printed, you know, with the first card stamp on it?
Yeah, that's a good question, because when we talked about it in our previous episode, I think that's kind of what we were thinking, like this is the first print run. But with the one of one stamp, I'm beginning to think, and I think this is what it is actually, is that there's only one first card. Like it is the actual first card in the print.
Okay, run. I see. Every base card basically has one.
Yes, I believe that's the case.
Oh, so internally they probably in their Monday meetings, they're like, make sure you stamp the first card. The guy just has the one of one, you know, embosser. He's just like, okay, I'm doing my job. And this is the fiasco, right?
He's like, oh, you actually meant to stamp the first card name on the card, not just a one of one.
That's crazy. I think, I don't know what I would do. Maybe if I had one, I would maybe keep it.
I would think the same.
What are you going to get from, they're going to offer you, what is that base card worth? If you have like just a regular base card with the one of one, does it have any value to it other than the credit they're going to give?
Right.
I could see like an Ellie De La Cruz or something be like massive. Something like that could be, you know, worth keeping, I guess. But depending on what they, I guess, trade in or what the value is. And it seems like Fanatics or Topps, they're figuring out their internal logistics once a quarter. There's news. Maybe it's their marketing campaign, part of their marketing campaign.
They're like, you know what? Whenever we F up, we get a lot of eyes on our product.
One a quarter.
So.
It's four a year. So it's like, it's always top news.
Yeah. So we're like one quote unquote mistake Right. I don't know how much they've sold for recently. I know there's been a few of these base one of one cards listed for like a few $100s. So right. It is worth something, right?
Right.
But just as you were saying, if I got one, I don't know if I would send it in. I think I might just keep it like a non-first card stamp.
What would that number be? There's always a number, Clark. Like you get a base card, not an LE or anything. We're talking about like the base of base, you know, like.
Yeah. Oh, wait. Do you mean like send it to them and not receive it back? I think you get it back.
Oh, you do get it stamped.
Yes.
But they said you're going to get a credit.
On top of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what would that be? What would that number be?
5? 100? No. I don't know. I'm sure it would be less than 100, right?
Like $100, like, $50 yeah. credit.
So in that case, I probably wouldn't send it in. You know what I mean?
Like, right.
If it's under
is there more value without the stamped card?
Right. Is it all of a sudden limited edition? How many? It's like a game almost. Like how many people are going to send it back? Right. You know, and get it that first card stamp on it. And how many are just going to keep it? And, you know, the other question is how many were thrown out accidentally? Like who's going to look at these base cards
and see
that there's a small one of one stamp?
Because they weren't in the hit spot, were they, of cards?
Ooh, good question. Where it's like flipped over?
Yeah, because I could see if they weren't in the hit spot, then that would be very problematic. Like everybody's
for sure, yeah.
Everybody's taking off work right now, looking at their, you know, the base card rips, hoping that they find a 101.
I got to go through, you know, I quickly went through, like I've opened a hobby box of 2024 Top Series 1, a blaster, and I just opened a hanger, so I'm just doing these videos, right? 0 hits, but you know, each time I'm looking at the back to see if I have the golden mirror variation. Now I got to go through it again to see if there's a one of one stamp on the lower right hand corner.
It's worth it, yeah.
And there's a bunch of cards, but I'm sure, you know what, I wouldn't be surprised if few of them have been thrown away or right. like, you know, just like somewhere in a big pile somewhere now. Right.
Yeah. I could see that for sure.
Yeah. What a mess if they didn't do it on purpose. But before we go on to the hobby headline section with the big news that I'm sure everyone knows what it is. Do you think it's even worth the few $100 that this one of one base card, first card, is going for now? Do you know what I mean? Like it is another one of one. I know right now some of the earlier buyers are paying a couple hundred for it, but at the end of the day, like I'll go first. I think it'll just drop in value. Like it's, you know, it's, I guess it's cool that's the very first card off the print run,
right?
But it's one of those things that I don't think all one of ones are created equal, and I think this is on the lower side of the poll, I guess.
I agree. For the most part, I think guys like Ellie De La Cruz and the bigger chases sure. of it might hold its value just because, you know, there's a story behind it. You know, there's only one. So at the end of the day, it's a collectible. It's distinguishable from the base card. So I think just the regular cards in the set, yeah, maybe people forget about it. It's like no big deal. There's 350 out there, but I think from a collector's perspective, if you're collecting, let's just say 5 years down the road and Ellie De La Cruz base cards, you know, are, you know, $20, $30 or $40 or whatever, I think that would hold more value and potential value in the future for sure.
True. Yeah, I would agree for sure. For the stud players, that definitely.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
There'll be some worth there. Okay. With that, let's move on now to hobby headlines. Okay, this is the big news of this past weekend. Hyung, you're the one that messaged our chat group late last night, and I had to kind of do a double take to see what I was reading. And of course, I'm talking about the latest acquisition by Collectors Holdings, Inc., which is the parent company of PSA, the grading service. And it's Darren Revelle, I believe, who broke the news Wednesday night that Collectors acquired their grading competitor, SGC. So there's a lot to unpack here, but for brief context, here's a recent quote from Nat Turner, Collector CEO, about the acquisition. Okay, he says, quote, "We recognize that every collector has their own preferred authentication and grading provider, and we look forward to providing expertise that will continue to enhance SGC's customer offering," end quote. And then right before we were recording, we were talking about how Pete, the SGC president, was saying they're excited because they have the collector's resources to improve the SGC brand. So I guess that was the first question, right? Like, are they going to merge and then it becomes one grading company, or are they going to have PSA and SGC separate? And it looks like it's the latter. So anyway, Hyung, your first thoughts when you heard the news?
Yeah. Just to answer that question quick, it's definitely not a merge, and we have to understand that. And I think it's right. Under PSA and Collector's Universe best interest to keep them separate as well. But the news is pretty crazy, but I'm not too shocked. I'm shocked that it happened this soon, but for me, the way I see it is totally different. And just a disclaimer out here. Before, stones are casted. I'm not a PSA fanboy by no means. Right. But they are doing things from a business perspective that makes sense to me. So I'm just unpacking it based on the way I see it. Yeah. I'm still probably going to submit to PSA. I dog them a lot, but at the end of the day, I prefer their, you put that reel up last week. I actually prefer PSA slabs over BGS, sure, just based on how the card looks, and how a PSA 10 even looks, right? But beyond that, just looking at it from SGC's perspective, they're a company that started in 98. They really kind of grew their name through the vintage market. And kind of gained popularity, I would say, at the time when Peter Steinberg kind of took over as president. I think he did a lot of good things that brought a lot of value to SGC. And during the time when SGC started rebranding and stuff, and we talked about this on our pod a couple years ago when, SGC is starting to come up, it's like, will you give SGC a chance now? Is SGC the next guy in line over Beckett? And sure enough, they did what they needed to do to kind of be that number two player in that spot. And for me, kudos to Peter Steinberg who's taken that company to do it. And you got to remember, these guys were a small fish at the end of the day compared to Collectors Universe in general, right? So I think it was in their intention to do something big, to bring more value to SGC in general, so that they could one day get bought out by the big fish, within that. So I could tell by Peter's announcement this morning, the one he placed on SGC, that I think all the ownership, the employees and everybody, they were pretty excited. It was big news to them. It's a big step for SGC. And the way they kind of mapped it out was that they've done what they can do. And, it's a matter of now, being under the umbrella of Collectors Universe and, sharing their resources in order for them to take it to the next level, wherever that may be, because the realities of it is grading's not going away anytime soon. SGC, from the sports card standpoint, I know it's a little different in the TCG world, but even then, they're a close second or third. At the end of the day, I think it was a good business move, because I'm looking at it from Collectors Universe, not PSA as a business. Remember, PSA was bought out You know, 2 years ago, for $850 million. And Nat Turner did a phenomenal job in terms of raising the funds and seeing the future longevity and kind of trajectory where PSA was going. And he got a valuation, you know, before 2023 at like something like $4.3 billion for, you know, Collector's Universe, right? So, and at the end of the day, you know, he's, I look at their whole business model and I see, you know, their portfolio and what they've built. And they have basically the PSA vault, obviously, PSA grading. They do coins with PCGS. They do WADA in terms of games. They do autograph authentication. So that's just their grading portfolio, right? And then they have the marketplace, you know, the transaction with Golden Auction, you know, all that. They're playing the long-term game in terms of where they see Collector's Universe. And we have to understand this. This is not just grading. They're just not a grading company.
Good point.
This is Collector's Universe who dominate the collectibilities marketplace because, you know, they project the marketplace to be over $500 billion in the near future. So they're doing the necessary things to be the big player in the game. And from a grading standpoint, they feel like, you know, SGC would be a great move at this time because it just adds to their grading potential and portfolio in their whole grand scheme of things. And grading is just a branch and it's a big part of Collector's Universe. It's kind of why they kind of blew up, I would say. And Nat Turner kind of took it that way. But I think from a different perspective, because I know from a hobbyist perspective, everybody's throwing shade. Like everybody doesn't like this move. It's not a good move. You could talk about monopoly laws or whatever. Like at the end of the day, from a business standpoint, all I'm saying is it makes sense from a Collector's Universe standpoint.
Right. No, I get all that for sure. And you're right. If you see the immediate reaction with the news, it's a lot of it is, there are definitely negative, but a lot of comments are, they're really surprised and just really anxious to see what happens next.
Right.
And I like your point that you got to see Collector's Universe or Collector's Holdings as a big umbrella company with all these different kinds of services they offer for the collector, hence their the name of their company. But at the same time, I wonder if I'm playing devil's advocate, and I know the word monopoly's been thrown out, even with Fanatics, the word monopoly's always been being thrown out. And it's the same concern with any kind of monopoly, right? That you stifle competition to the point where inevitably they can start increasing prices for any of their services if they're a one-stop shop, right? But before we get there, like, do you think that the PSA brand and SGC brand will continue as the current presidents of each respective grading company both agree on, that they will continue to be independent and be separate? Or do you think there's a chance that it could merge down the line if it's financially beneficial to do so, right? Because I say this because everyone will say, of course, we're going to continue the brand. But then when times get tough, you know what happens? They merge, like the brands start to merge to make it more, you know, better on the, in the bank books, right? So what do you think?
I could see the thing is, it's so fresh, it's so new that like so many things happen. We could speculate like all these things, a lot of variables in place, right? So we could only speculate this. My thought on this in a month can totally change, right? But I think it makes sense for them to keep it in the meantime. Like I just go to Fanatics, for instance. I could see Fanatics, for instance, when they purchased PWCC, you know, I could see it as a Fanatics marketplace over PWCC marketplace in the future, even though PWCC had a strong brand. So I see it kind of in the same way, in the same context. But I think it's a little different with SGC is because they've built such a strong reputation itself in terms of vintage, in terms of, you know, their grading and their kind of like clientele. And they've offered an alternative to PSA's offerings in terms of cheaper gradings, release gradings. And I think it's a nice little niche that, you know, SGC built a lot of value within themselves, right? So I would think that in the meantime, it makes no sense to merge. It makes no sense to cross over. Offer offer kind of a crossover, even crossover service. I don't think you kind of need that, right? I think it's more, hey, this is where SGC plays right now. They've done a tremendous job with their branding and where their future vision is. I don't know. I don't sit in their board meetings or with the CEO of Collectors at the end of the day and where they envision their kind of plan. But as for me, in the meantime, I wouldn't merge any, like, it to me, it's like that's something you don't want to do if you're PSA, right? You want to keep the brand separated. There's value in both brands. Obviously, SGC took a lot of market share, and we got to remember SGC is still number two in all other sports cards at the end of the day. No one's going to send their TCG cards to basically CSG or CGC.
CGC, yeah.
Yeah, like at the end of the day, that's what you're going to have to expect to take SGC's number as number two in the sports card industry. And I don't think it will happen. I only see people going to CGC because, you know, they absolutely, for whatever reason, hate PSA and will not support or give them a dollar. Now it's like, what's the other choice? It's either Beckett or CGC at this point. And, you know, you could pick your poison. I wouldn't say pick your poison because, you know, CGC has been doing good at the end of the day, but I don't think they're present in too much in the sports card market or have that credibility. So I think it's important to keep the brand separate. SGC brings enormous value, especially what they've done in the last couple of years with the way they changed their brand. So I think it was a good acquisition by Collectors. And on the flip side, the merge, it's not a merge. And I think that's what we have to make it clear, that we're not sharing resources. Like SGC 10s will not be a PSA 10 because they're owned by the same company. It doesn't work that way, right? Yeah. It's totally different. I think you got to keep the brand separate.
Yeah, for the record, I agree with you. I, you know, in addition to everything you said, there's a lot of history with SGC and PSA, and you have all those collectors that would just be pissed off if you had suddenly merged the two brands, right, and made it just PSA. So I think they're thinking of those collectors. But at the end of the day, though, like, big picture, on the other side of the equation, this is of course a great business move for Collectors, you know, and like you're saying, if you're a collector that just can't stand PSA but you like SGC, Collectors is still winning, right? They're getting money either way. So it's a great business move, and it's good to diversify in that way. So that's another reason why I think they should keep it in terms of two separate brands. But if you're the competitor, is this really bad news for them? Like, how would you react to it? Like, we're talking about Beckett, which in terms of market share, if you're talking numbers, according to Gemrate, PSA has about 78% market share now, 7% from SGC. That's a combined 85% that Collectors owns now. And then the rest is 10% CGC. And like you mentioned, most of it is TCG cards. And then Beckett in the rear with 4%, and all the smaller other companies make up the remaining 1%. So this is a huge market share by Collectors.
Right.
Is there something to be worried about in terms of, you know, even if you're not a Beckett fan or CGC fan, right? Like, there is something to be said about competition that pushes, you know, other companies to provide better service. Or do you think
for sure
it's a non-issue? What do you think?
I think it's definitely a concern. I think you know, with the acquisition of SGC, you're talking about 85% of the market share. And, you know, monopolies or, you know, antitrust laws usually raise flags, you know, past that 50-60% mark in terms of market share. But on the flip side, you know, what really defines a monopoly is, you know, there's no other choice really. And it's up to us consumers at the end of the day. There's 25 grading companies at the end of the day, just in the US alone, right? So we have that choice to make as end consumers. So I don't necessarily think it's as valid if you look at it in the picture of Collectors Universe. You know, it's just it's bigger than just the grading company is what I'm saying. It's not their only business. There's just a portion of it, and there's a lot of options within that grading company. The problem is these options are a lot smaller companies. They don't have the marketing budgets that, you know, PSA and even SGC has at this point, right? Even you could see it in Beckett and how they struggle. Obviously, they have more problems to solve than just marketing, internal issues would be one of them as well, right? So, I think on the flip side, yes. One, there is concern. Anytime, you know, that you have market share over 50%, you got to see. And that's the thing. It's so many different variables. This thing gets taken to court. It's like, well, it all depends. It could go one way or the other, depending on,
sure,
you know, what they unfold and unravel at the end of the day. But for me, it's a fair assessment to say, well, we as collectors have choices, then grade with Beckett, you know, grade with another company if you don't, you think that's unfair. Right, there are choices out there. The problem is you wouldn't necessarily choose it, because at the end of the day, you're looking at it from a value standpoint, and that's why you would give money to PSA, for instance, to grade their cards, because at the end of the day, you as a consumer are looking at the value that PSA is giving you back. And to me, that's why you would spend money in the first place. Why would you spend something if you're not getting a reciprocal value that you believe that, you know, your money is giving you? So I think it's a fair argument to say, at the end of the day, if you don't like it, then don't support PSA. Send your cards to CGC, for instance, right? And be happy with it. You can't yell monopoly law saying that there's no other options. There's no other options that you may not like, but that doesn't mean that, you know, necessarily that it's, you know, they're doing something bad, right? So,
yeah. The only thing I would push back on is with that IG reel that I did, PSA versus BGS, from our last podcast, which is, it's getting a lot of attention. There's a ton of comments on it, and some of them are pretty hilarious, and I did laugh at some of them. But for the most part, people do like the PSA slabs better. So I'm in the minority of being in the BGS camp. But for someone like me that loves BGS slabs, I'm still not submitting anything to Beckett because it takes so bloody long to get my card's back,
right?
It's you know, and it's frustrating. And then, you know, it's like, how can they improve their system if they don't have the capital to improve their system? And then, you know, whereas collectors is just pouring money into PSA and now pouring money into SGC to provide better value. Right. So that's going to steal customers away. And then, you know, worst case scenario for a BGS fan like me is that Beckett just folds their grading service.
Right.
And then you're like, you're stuck with just PSA and SGC and CGC.
Well, I think at that point, you know, that can't be on PSA. That's on Beckett, right? Like, for instance, you said it yourself. It's like, I want to send it to Beckett, but ... fill in the blanks. That's on Beckett, right? Like, whatever, because now you're paying money for that service and you're not happy. You don't think it's worth it. That's why you're not sending any cards at whatever price. It's not worth it at the end. Mm. And that's, to me, that's a business problem that Beckett has, right? Is that our customers turning away from their service because the service is just not good. They have zero, people have zero ambition to send it to Beckett. That shouldn't be on anybody else but Beckett. And if that does happen where they run themselves to the ground because of internal logistics, then, you know, someone who's an opportunist will come by and see the brand value that Beckett has, realize that Beckett has way more brand value probably than SGC in the first place. So for me, it's just ebbs and flows of how, in the bigger picture, the catalyst for growth in any organization or any marketplace, for instance, or any emerging marketplace, is that you have the ebbs and flows of these things. And we're just kind of zoomed in kind of like the microeconomics of everything, right? But I think in the bigger picture, and like I said, your questions are valid, but I would take it more accountability on the individual brands that do exist. So if you don't have enough money for marketing, it's just, what did collectors do? You know, Nat Turner had to go raise capital at the end of the day. So if you're Beckett, go raise capital. I'm pretty sure there's a lot of people with a lot of money that, you know, see the same value, but it's not up to anybody else but Beckett to, you know, raise that money and then implement and invest back into their company. So to me, who's responsible for that? It has to be the brand itself. And I don't think that can necessarily go on the fault of Collectors Universe.
Yeah, I reluctantly agree. But I, you know, my ideal solution, if I was Beckett, is, and I can't take credit for this, our hobby friend Refractor Jones made a long comment on one of my reels about PSA acquiring all these companies. We forgot to mention Card Ladder. They also own that, right? And a great analytics tool for the hobby. But the best ideal solution for Beckett is that Collectors buys Beckett next, okay? And starts to pour resources. And then we're really talking about Monopoly, probably from a grading standpoint.
Right.
Which is something to consider.
Yeah.
I mean, what's the alternative? Another, you kind of alluded to it, another billionaire or a hedge fund needs to come in to build the BGS brand again, right? So right. I don't know what it's going to be.
You mentioned that just now. You know, I mentioned Collectors Universe as a big umbrella, or you mentioned that, and then within that they have grading and authentication. Then they have their coins, they have their authentication, auto authentication, then they have their PSA grading. Now they have SGC, they have WADA. They have all these other smaller brands, right? And then Card Ladder, you said. What do you think that falls under? Research. Card research. So you got card grading authentication, then you got card research, then you got a card marketplace. So if for me, seeing Collectors Universe as a whole, I see what they're trying to do. So it makes sense in terms of, you know, buying up the smaller brands within their four pillars of all of Collectors.
Right.
Remember, this is collectors.com is we're talking coins, autograph memorabilia, we're talking anything that is a collectible, right? And now we zoom in, and then they own these, this parent company, Collectors Universe, owns all these little companies, and little companies meaning PSA, right? Like within their grading authentication for collectors. So for me, it's like, it's a part of kind of like what their long-term plan is. They're basically doing it, you know, the right way, to be honest. And, you know, and when you mentioned Beckett, I could see them doing that. Like they could literally devalue Beckett by making their moves on what they do. And as long as Beckett's really not doing anything about it, they're going to get a steal for it, you know? And for me, I could even see Beckett more of a media publication, and it's something that PSA lacks, because PSA Magazine, I don't want to read it, to be honest. And it's not saying that they have great information. That's the thing. But something with Beckett in terms of media publication, because that's the OG, it could bring a lot of value to that side of things where, 100%. You know, now you're talking news media like type company where Beckett has, you know, a long lasting history. So I think there's a lot of value on that end that, you know, Collectors Universe could see Beckett as not just the grading alternative, but in their overall picture of their long-term goal as a company with collectors, right? So,
great point. Yep. And I just want to shout out PSA Magazine because I was featured in one of their editions, so I don't want to knock them too hard. But you're right. Their magazine is more almost like a glorified newsletter in a way, in some, you know, with a few articles. But Beckett, of course, has the legacy brand there. So that would be a good move. I agree. All right. Last question before we go to our next segment. And I kind of mentioned it, you know, with them possibly looking to acquire Beckett. That's obviously just speculation, but who would be next? If you're Collectors, who would you be targeting? It doesn't have to be grading. Like, what do you think the next move could be for them?
For Collectors Universe?
Yeah.
Well, I would say based on their plan, so I divided up with grading authentication. I think they don't really need to make those moves. I think SGC is a pretty big move, and obviously Beckett would be kind of like the expected next kind of move, but like I said, I think they're expanding their portfolio sideways, right? As a whole collector standpoint. So like research, for instance, there's a reason why Card Ladder was purchased. It's like if you look at PSA's research, their database is probably not the best. They don't have pricing. So I would think they would expand to technology, you know, in terms of apps potentially, apps that fit in that research type category, because now if you could bring that all together in one brand, now you have control over multiple aspects of kind of like the whole collecting space, right? So I would think that it would have to do with technology. In terms of whether it's internal technology, investing in their own kind of things with grade. We talk about this all the time. Subjective grading is a big issue. So is expanding in that area where they're implementing new technology into grading. They're investing in themselves in terms of servicing the industry better. So I think from a grading standpoint, I think they could chill for a bit because they do have kind of like the majority of market share. They keep doing what they're doing. I love that SGC provides that $9 special. It encourages, people to rip, submit, and, potentially make a profit off that, right? So they're, in my opinion, like they have both areas covered. So I would think they, Collectors keeps on moving to their portfolio building, right? And I don't think it will be in grading, but it could be in research, whether it's done through apps, for more data, what we were talking about, what was it?
Technology.
Yeah, technology. Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. I that's kind of what I was thinking as well. I was just looking up Gemrate. You know, they're I believe still a privately owned company. Right. I think they're kind of like perfect for collectors kind of in the same way they bought Card Ladder for research purposes, for data population purposes, just to help their overall growth and help with their future direction with all that info they can mine from these smaller companies. So that's another, I'm calling it, and then we could come back to this episode
about Five Card Guys, Cards to the Moon?
That'd be amazing. PSA? We could be the official available podcast of collectors. Yeah. That's but that's the thing about, we kind of joke, but like what we're doing and what we're building, you and I, Hyung, with Integrity Sports Cards, even your company Apotaco and my company Five Card Guys and our joint podcast, we're all about building the brand, kind of like what SGC is doing to provide as much value. And maybe it makes sense down the road if we do get acquired by someone.
Absolutely. Right? Absolutely.
Because we can accelerate what we want to do by an influx of capital or resources in general. Right?
100%. And I'm glad you hit that point, because that's what business is if it's all about value and, what you build based on that value and how other companies value that same thing, that same standard is, if you show up every day and you're building a brand. So if you're in the sports card industry, whatever brand, whether it's grading, whether it's technology, it's showing up every day and giving value at the end of the day. And if you could keep on doing that, it will be valuable to someone down the road. And, with technology that we have, and when I say technology, I'm not talking about AI, I'm just talking about basic internet, communication tool where you could reach out, you could market yourself, you could make things go viral. There are ways, multiple ways you bring value within that community. And someone might see that in the bigger picture and acquire you at one point, right? And that's how, people in my network think, because why would you start a business in the first place? A lot of people would start a business saying, oh, this is my baby, and they're so emotionally attached to it. But then, well, what's your exit? What's your strategy? Well, we don't know. We, even with Cards to the Moon, we never even discussed that, but it was never about that. It was all about giving value, showing up every day, and doing this through passion. And when you kind of build your foundations off of that, I think there's always good to come out of it, whether it's exiting, being acquired by another company, or you building your own legacy, right?
Yeah. Yep. Yep. And last point to add to that is, for us, we see sports card media as such a great opportunity to grow. Absolutely. Even within the sports card space, right? Look at sports media in general, how it's huge right now.
Yeah.
All the different companies, ESPN and all the national networks that just cover sports in general, but it was built off of the major sports leagues. And there's all these ways of being part of the industry. And I think sports cards is growing to the point where there are all these smaller companies profiting and benefiting from the bigger hobby industry. Right. And I think there's still a lot of room to grow. We've been saying this all this time. And that's why we love still being able to do this, whether it's providing value through information or just entertainment, even in our through our podcasts and our websites.
Right.
So yeah, excited about, it's always exciting to hear this kind of news because we see the potential for even more growth in the hobby in general.
Absolutely. And that's the biggest thing I wanted. Last thing about this is like, I have like, and you're the same way. It's like, and I'm sure everybody is. Everybody has like regular jobs. This is not something we do full time. Like, you know, we're making money off of this. We've been doing this podcast for 3 years now or something like that. And we showed up every week. We told ourselves we don't even want sponsors. We don't want anybody affiliated with it where we owe them anything. We show up every week and give value, right? So it's just something that like I want everybody to be aware. It's like we're not like anytime, like you said, we hear good news in the hobby, we see the future of the hobby. We want to contribute to that. And as we see these news, I just see it as good news in general, whether it's bad or good news. It's just a catalyst to push that growth forward. And to me, that's, it might sound more fanboy type. Oh, this guy just gets sponsored by PSA. It's like, trust me, man. I hate PSA just as much as you, but I love PSA just as much as you, if that makes sense.
Love-hate relationship.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And I agree with you in terms of sponsors too. Like, you know, we've partnered with different companies in the past. Whatever makes sense, that's what we go for. Mm-hmm. And, you know, at the end of the day, there's more opportunities to be had. So we always take a case-by-case basis. But yeah, this is overall, I think we both agree it's great news just to hear more of these kind of investments. And it won't certainly be the last thing we hear regarding hobby acquisitions and anything hobby related in general. Okay, let's move on to our next segment we call Quiz Show. All right, I'm just going to ask you a few hobby related questions. We've done this in the past, but if you're a first time listener, I'm going to ask Kyung a few hobby related questions and we'll see how many he gets. And this is in context of other hobby news that we haven't covered yet because, you know, we had to talk about the STC acquisition,
right?
And then the Topps first card fiasco was a big discussion in our chat group, so I thought that would be fun to talk about. But there's been a couple other things that's been happening, so I incorporated into our quiz show just so we have that information covered. All right, so the first one, last weekend, a sealed 16 box case of 1979-1980 OPC hockey cards was sold at an auction for $3.72 million. We're Canadian, so we know the OPC brand, and we know the 1979 OPC cards has the iconic Wayne Gretzky, the true Wayne Gretzky, sorry, no offense to Topps, but the OPC one has the most value. So, unopened, 16-box case in pretty much pristine condition, which is amazing. There's 768 total packs in the case, okay? 768. And if you do the math, with that $3.72 million auction sale, that ends up being $4,843.75 per pack, which is crazy. Now, here's the question. What was the original retail price of a single pack?
In 79, I got to say, man, that's a good question. I got to say like 75 cents.
Okay, good guess. The answer is 20 cents per pack, which would make the case valued at $153.60 back then.
Oh, I missed those days, huh?
Well, 79, 80, I was 1 year old. You know, you weren't even born.
I wasn't even thought of.
But what a flip.
Yeah, crazy. But it's the only known case in existence in terms of that condition, right? So I think there's... As crazy as this sounds, it's like that's another level of collectability, right? So for me, it's someone who obviously, like, it makes no sense for the owner to open that. Like, you know what I mean? It's like you keep that as the only sealed, like, good condition, 79, 80 OPC, which is a massive, massive set in the sports card world, in the hockey world especially. So for me, it's like... I get it, I guess, with a question mark.
What would you do? If you, holy, so I got a case of 1979-80 OPC hockey cards.
I'd definitely sell it. I would sell it. I would cash out because for me, it is a, if I had it And it all depends, right? Everybody's situation is different based on if they need the $4 million or not, right? So it's like, if you don't need the $4 million, then I'm sure keeping it would be the right move, right?
I would sell too, but I mean, I was more alluding to like, you have the case. You wouldn't, you know, maybe sell it off by box, maybe keep one for yourself?
No. It would be more as a hobbyist, I think anybody who has it needs to keep it intact. Like, don't touch it, don't open it. For the sake of the hobby, for the sake of value, like it's a good marriage. It's like, why would you? Like, there's no, like, this is not for profit, like, not necessarily for profit. Obviously, you still want to make a good investment, but you're not, this is long term. It's like, you know, think in 20 years, you know, what that value of the Gretzky card is worth, the PSA 10s, and the knowing of that this case that's in mint condition could potentially have multiples in there, you know. So for me, it's that kind of guessing game that brings the value more so than we have it right now. Let's liquidate it.
I can see that, but
you want to sell it.
I want to sell it box by box because it would make really great content if I just opened the box up.
The $4 million content.
Yeah, you never know. You never know how viral those videos can get.
I think somebody like Mr. Beast or like Logan Paul. Right. I think they would do like a live rip and then get like 50, 60 million views, and then they'd pay that case off, and it would be next, right?
Okay, you know what I would do then? I would sell a box to Mr. Beast. I would sell a box to Logan Paul. They know what the value of it is. Yeah, right? They know they can probably make 2-3x by filming themselves. And, you know, I could keep some of the profit just
there
by selling it to them.
Entrepreneur. There you go.
We worked it out. Okay. All right. Question number two. All right. I saw this tweet from Darren Revelle, who was the one that broke the PSA STC news. But this was about hobby history. So staying on the theme of hobby history. On the last week of February, when, you know, we're recording this episode, 35 years ago today, a new card company called Upper Deck was founded. It's the 35th anniversary. And he reported, Darren Revelle reported, that it debuted selling each pack for how much back in 1989? Another how much per pack question for you. 1989, Upper Deck. And remember, these packs were pretty innovative when they came out.
100%. Right? I was just going to say that. Packs. Upper Deck was like high end. You're buying Louis Vuitton here, like, you know what I mean?
They were temperless packs. There were no gum. They took away the gum. They're like, we're better than that.
Hologram,
glossy print, and yes, the counterfeit proof hologram. They've incorporated that in their card. So how much per pack did it sell for in 1989?
I'm gonna say $125.
Oh,
these were premium. Guess. These are premium. This was a premium product.
Yeah, so in comparison, we just said the 1979 OPG packs were 20 cents. So a decade later, 1989, it actually sold for $1.
Oh, wow.
You're pretty close. So there you go. $1 per pack during the junk wax era, no less. All right. Question number three. Okay, this is kind of a fun one. So from the 2024 Top Series 1 blaster boxes, right? You can get those Easter or those spring holiday parallels.
Right.
You've seen some of those. It's similar to the Halloween parallels from last year's Topps update, right? It's kind of fun to collect. Anyway, one of the parallels, numbered to 5, is the watering can parallel. Okay, just got random watering cans sprinkling water. It's pretty random, but it is numbered to 5. But there was a Bobby Witt watering can parallel numbered to 5 sold last week. How much do you think it sold for? And I'll give you a multiple choice. $100, $300, or $500?
Oh, man. I hope it's not
$500. Number to 5, man.
But it's a water can parallel. Wait, hang on. Wait a minute. Maybe the water can parallel is like some Home Depot collab. Like, you get like a... $10,000
utility afterwards.
$10,000 gift card if, you know, they steal the base or something.
That's a good idea. I hope Topps is listening.
Yeah, I mean, it's out of 5, right? So it's the same format. It's like the parallel doesn't make sense. I'm gonna say I'm going to say 500 because people are just crazy.
It did sell for $300.
$300, so okay.
We're not that crazy yet, but we're getting up there. Okay, last question for this quiz show. Let's talk about real dollars now, okay? None of this few hundred dollars crap, okay? Just a few days ago, I know you're aware that a 1952 Topps Mickey Mantle graded a PSA 8.5 sold for a healthy $2.37 million.
Wow.
According to Card Ladder, the last 8.5 graded PSA graded card sold in December of 2019, so about 5 years ago. How much did it sell for then?
This one's tough. Do you have a population or no? Of PSA 9s, PSA 5, and PSA, then 9s?
8.5 is a 5. I'll look it up while you think about it. But PSA obviously 9s. The 8.5 will be lower pop because you don't get...
Yeah. No, I'm just trying to see how many 9s there are. And now I'll base my guess off that. An 8.5 in 2019. That was before the hobby. And it sold for how much?
The most recent one?
Yeah.
2.37 million.
I'm going to say $650,000.
How much?
$650,000.
Oh, okay. To answer your question before I answer, PSA 9, there's a pop count of 6. So 5 for 8.5, 6 for PSA 9.
And then there's 3 PSA 10s. And sorry, do you have the PSA 8s?
8? Yes, it is 35.
35. Okay. So this is where the pop starts going up. I'm going to say 2019. I'm going to say
$750,000. 750? You just increased it another 100 grand?
100 grand. There's pop 5.
The correct answer is 765,000. Wow. That's pretty good.
Yeah. Well, I would figure, you know, that was pre-COVID. So, you know, 10X was probably the marker. So, but then it dropped a bit. So 5X would be kind of like where I was at a bit, like, or at least around there, you know.
Very good reasoning. Yep. Still a healthy increase. That's, if you do the math again, that's a 210% increase in less than 5 years. So Mickey Mantle cards, 1952, still doing well in this market. It's a completely different market, right?
That's when what I'm saying. It's art. Yeah, I'm telling you, it's so iconic that's the holy grail. Mm-hmm. And this is what I have to make clear. And this is what I think card collectors don't fully understand. It's not the best player's value is the most. It's not about the greatest of all time and their cards are the most. There's so many different factors when it comes to collectability. So it's like, keep that in mind whenever you're making your moves. When investing for the future,
100%. You know, and I think I read somewhere. It's different than fantasy sports, where the best player has the most value. There's so many other factors in the world of collecting. I'm glad you made that point. All right, good job on this quiz show. It was much better than previous ones. And those aren't easy questions. All right, let's end off this episode with a regular weekly segment we call Pick One. And this is when each of us, we choose two cards or two players, and then we debate which one we would rather invest in. So, Hyung, do you want to start things off?
Sure. One? Yeah, I got I was going through some Ronnie Acuna's because, you know what? Like, I think I was dissecting Soto and how much I like Soto and then all these other players, upcoming stars, and I'm just like, man, Acuna is so good. He's so fun. He's a player that has so much character. And I was a huge Acuna collector before COVID. So, you know, he was a big collectability. And surprisingly, during that time, Topps Chrome Auto got no love ever for some reason. Okay. And Topps Chrome Update got some love. But the Topps Chrome, where it's the standard Topps Chrome batting image of his back. So I'm going to go with the auto version blue. Okay.
Okay.
Of that card. A blue auto sold for, and his 2018 Topps Chrome blue auto out of 150 sold for $2,000. Okay. This is a SGC 10.
Okay.
Since we brought up SGC. I'm going to pair that up with a PSA card of the 2017 Bowman Chrome Acuna. It's a refractor in a PSA 9. So number to 499, a Bowman Chrome Acuna.
This is first Bowman Chrome,
refractor auto.
Yeah.
PSA 9 auto 10. Okay. Also sold for $2,000. And that this was like recent. So it's like, so if you have $2,000 and you're the buyer, why are you buying the blue or why are you buying the refractor? Because they're the same price. So two people thought differently. Mm-hmm. What would you pick or what would you have in that thinking process of why you would purchase that?
Oh boy, that's a good one. Because the things to consider are rarity. So the blue, of course, is numbered to 150 versus the refractor, which is numbered to 499.
Right.
Both serial numbered, so that's good. And then, of course, the grade, right? SGC 10 versus a PSA 9 with the auto 10. And then the brand too, right? Like Topps Chrome versus First Bowman Chrome.
Right.
So those are the three main factors that I'm considering. And I'm trying to weigh things in my head right now while I'm trying to decide like which one would have the better value and which one I would like to have even as a collector. It's no surprise for anyone who listens to the podcast. I love the First Bowman Chromes. I think those are the ones to go for in terms of rookie cards of your favorite players and even for investment purposes. But, you know, with the market down, you also like to, you have to consider rarity. Like, you know, I'm going to go for, I don't like this, but I'm going to go for, or I don't feel great about this, but I'm going to go for the First Bowman Chrome number to 499.
Stick to your guts, your roots.
But I love, you know, I love the, especially the blue refractor number to 150. I've been collecting, I just got the Beau Bichette, but it's also First Bowman Chrome. So that was a no brainer. But I think what tipped me over was, and we were just talking about grading earlier in the show, the PSA, even though it was just a PSA 9, with the auto grade 10 kind of gives it the bump.
Right.
With that, you know.
So if it was a PSA 9, just no auto grade, it might be different?
It's definitely closer. Definitely closer. I think PSA was still edged out because the First Bowman also gives it the extra bump.
Right.
If it was a First Bowman base, like you, not even the refractor, I would probably go with the Topps Chrome. I think it, because it was also numbered to 499, it just incrementally put it over the edge for me for the First Bowman refractor 499 PSA 9. So that's my vote.
Interesting. I go back and forth between this because, you know, we do like rarity. We do like, obviously, 10s. I think something to note, though, and maybe this goes in your favor, and this is something that I just noticed. When SGC grades auto cards, if the auto is not a 10, they don't grade the auto, which could be a value to a lot of collectors because it's the worst when you get like a graded 10 card, but the auto's 9. Like it's such an awkward thing. And if that was the case with SGC, they wouldn't put the auto on there. It would just be a slab in the 10 grade. And in this case, that's what it was. It was just the SGC 10 grade, no auto grade.
Right? Okay.
Because the auto wasn't perfect.
Okay.
At least to SGC. So that probably will solidify.
I feel better. I feel better with my decision now. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think I would use that as a factor. And on top of that, where this pick one kind of stood out was that the auto is the most important thing, I think, in an Acuna auto card. Right? Because for me, I always talk about it, you know, Ronnie, when he signed his first minor league contract, signing bonus out of, you know, out of when he was 16, 17 years old, it was 2017. And he was waiting for those cards. He'd been practicing his signature for like years. He's like, I'm going to sign the crap out of these. And they look great. His auto in 2017 is a masterpiece. And like I said, he got big time literally within a year. And his autos look like chicken scratch at the end of the day after that. So for me, it's kind of like Shohei's auto. Which one would you rather have, pre-2021 or post-2021, right?
Right.
Acuna, for me, it goes back to that. Anytime there's an auto, I'm on the 2017 Bowman Chrome camp. Like, the autos on the 2017 Bowman Chrome are unmatchable to what Acuna signs nowadays. So I think over the long run, regardless of grade, I'm going to go with the Bowman Chrome first as well.
Nice. Yeah, that's a good one. I'm just was comparing the autos. And
do you see it?
Yeah, it's like he almost loses a D in Ronald.
it's like a line
all the way through after the R.
But the 2017 one is like really
nice. More distinct. Yeah, the letters are more distinct. You got the nice A.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a way nicer auto.
Agreed. All right, good one. So it's the first Bowman sweep there. All right. I know if you've been listening to the past, four or five episodes, we talk a lot about 2024 Top Series 1. I really love the set. What can I say? So I'm going to stick with that set for the pick one. And arguably, these two players are the chase in the 2024 Top Series 1. So I'm going to pit them against each other. First one is the Shohei Ohtani. We talked about this one before. The blueprint insert, autograph card,
right,
numbered to 10. Okay. And it sold for $1,000 a couple days ago. And these are all raw. None of these are graded yet. Okay, the 2024 Top Series 1 Shohei Ohtani Superstar Blueprint Auto numbered to 10. And it's a sticker auto, just to let you know, in that corner of the card. Versus the Ellie De La Cruz, and I believe this is on-card auto, his gold number to 50 that comes out of the silver pack. So it kind of has that mojo look. But it is a gold, but it's numbered to 50. And it's an insert, the 35th anniversary card as well.
Do you have images for both or no? Or links?
Yep. I could let me show you the image by sharing my screen.
This is going to be a big factor in it.
Okay.
I already know my answer, but I just need to see these cards. Okay.
So there's the
Ellie. That's sticker auto too, the Ellie.
Oh, yes, that's right. That is sticker auto.
So
right,
gold 50.
Yeah.
And then a non-rookie Ohtani, and that's a sticker auto too, right?
Yep.
But it looks nice.
The blueprint insert's pretty nice. I like it.
Man, and they're the same price?
$1,000, yeah. Give or take $50-$60, yeah.
Wow. I'm going to go with the Ohtani auto, to be honest.
Ooh, wow. Okay.
Here's why. I think Ellie De La Cruz is going to be a superstar.
Okay.
Like, I believe in his talent.
Yeah.
I believe that there are a lot of inconsistencies in his game that he has to learn and adapt to for him to be that superstar player. So you're going to see this year and next year is big years, in my opinion. Like, it's you don't know what's going to happen. Obviously, you root for the guy because he's, you know, 6'5", exciting, super young, 22 years old, you know, can do some special, special things, switch hitter, can hit home runs, can steal bags, can throw 100 across the infield. So it's all the right pieces. But insert auto, rookie hype, I think it's inflated. Obviously, Ohtani's price in general, there's a premium for Ohtani auto, so I think that's inflated. I just think there could be a lot more going wrong with Ellie's card as opposed to Ohtani's, because Ohtani's autos are in high demand in general. So you always have a liquid marketplace as long as Ohtani still continues to play. And that goes with both parties, right? You could say that, you know, well, if Ohtani doesn't play, then obviously Ellie's the, but it's vice versa. If Ellie doesn't play, then Ohtani's the guy. But if both players played and they did what they were meant to do, I think, I would still go with the Ohtani auto. I just don't feel like that, especially that card, that you showed. Yeah, I just don't see that's the desired Ellie that you want. Like, I would rather spend $1,000 on, you know, maybe a Topps Chrome rookie auto when it comes out, or, you know, a Bowman Chrome. His Bowman Fair. Chrome, right? So.
Okay. Going with the Shohei.
Shohei. $700 million man.
Should have known from you that you always go with Shohei. Should ask John what he would think. But, I feel like he would go with Shohei as well, but it's a nice looking card.
It is.
A lot of Ellie De La Cruz. Nice looking card, even it being an insert card. And it's gold, which is nice. And it's a rookie card emblem. I thought all of those things could maybe get you, because at the end of the day, the Shohei card, I like, just as I mentioned, I like the Superstar Blueprint insert set. But it is a non-auto, and it's a sticker auto as well. But I agree with you. I think the floor is significantly higher for Shohei, even with this card. And that, you know, I've seen a lot of breaks just on YouTube, and there's a lot of Ellie cards in this. Like, you could tell that Top Series 1 2024, Ellie was the primary focus.
He's the guy.
Right? The chase, they're like, let's put a lot of these, you know, rare parallels, autographs, let's really promote Ellie in this set. Mm-hmm. And so I think there's a lot of choices you can get. And Shohei, you know, obviously he's a big chase all the time now, but I don't think he has as many as Ellie even in this 2024 Top Series 1 set. So for that reason, I'm going Shohei as well. Higher floor and even possibly higher ceiling. Like,
yeah, I agree. I think, you just never know with Ohtani autos. Like, based on what we've seen, it's like not like I was looking for an Ohtani auto any year at one point.
Right.
It's just like, which one? Like, it's like, you know what I mean? So
it's crazy. Yeah. Yeah. They'll just remain on my watch list. I'm not going to pull the trigger anytime soon with the prices they're going for these days. Okay. Thanks again for all our listeners. We appreciate you guys. And we'll have a brand new episode for you guys next week. Talk to you later. Bye. Hey, thanks for listening to Cards to the Moon. We'd really appreciate you subscribing to our podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts. And you can also connect with each of us on Instagram at 5CardGuys, or you can follow Hyung at Integrity Sports Cards, or John at TradeU at Recess. You can also check us out at 5CardGuys.com. Thanks again, and hope to connect soon.